are listening live to the program. Your teams, your town, your program.
Couser gets into one to right. Back goes Renfro, the right fielder. He's at the track. He's looking up, and that's a splash. A home run for Couser to right center. And the Orioles take a 1-0 lead in the third. Westbrook drives this to left center. Back that one goes. Back to the track, and that baby's gone. Back to back. Couser and Westberg, and it's 2-0 Baltimore.
Royals bring the infield in, and Mountcastle lofts this down the left field line. That's going to drop in there for a base hit, and Santander will walk home and score. Mountcastle to second base. That's another extra base hit. An RBI double for Mountcastle, and it's 3-0 Baltimore.
And now, wondering if Sean Payton just has a Wilson fetish, Seren Petro.
Right you are, Kay. Right you are. Petro in the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a Monday. Beautiful Monday.
Yes.
72 degrees, maybe a little windy. It gets a little windy in some spots. So, you know, take a bonnet if you're so inclined. Whatever you need on
not
a windy day.
Not enough bonnets being worn.
Yeah, I've always been pro bonnets.
I agree.
You know, looks like a good bonnet.
Unless there's a bee in it, which, you know.
Isn't the bonnet just like the thing that they would kind of just tie down?
Yeah.
My great aunt wore a bonnet.
It's a good look.
It's for her.
It's a bucket hat without the straps.
My great aunt visited every continent except Antarctica. And went through both the Suez and Panama Canal.
Wow. That's a list.
So, she's bringing bonnets back.
She's been to more places than Johnny Cash. And he's been everywhere, man.
Rode an elephant and a camel.
But that was in, like, Lenexa, which is weird.
It's weird, like, strange. Tiger King-like petting zoo that, you know.
Been on the surface of the sun.
Not of the sun, but, you know, did visit the pyramids and, like, you name
Seriously?
It. Yes.
Good God. Yeah. That's amazing.
She took, when her husband was still alive, in the 1960s, because my mom house sat for her at her house in Fairway and broke her sink while house sitting. How do you break a sink? I don't know. But my mom and her friend figured it out. Her husband was not happy, my uncle. But 9 months, trip around the world. And they used to be able to travel, maybe you still can, by, like, container ships.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have, like, several cabins that if you wanted to travel and you were at the whim of the ship.
Yeah.
So the ship would pull into... You know, I think she went on two or three different ships, literally went, not just figuratively, all the way around the world. I mean, went all the way around the world.
Smoke.
And you would just, like, pull into port. You might have to sit 2 or 3 days before you could pull into port. Well, they'd have a boat, would come get them and take them into port, and they might be a day or two to offload and load, so they might be 5 or 6 days in wherever. So they would go in, and they had however long to...
What a life.
Yeah. She was an amazing person. Amazing person. Not my plan today, but, you know.
Some of the best things are not
planned. She wore a bonnet. Tie it tight.
Yes.
If you wear your bonnets. Yeah, so that's where that came from. Adam Teicher is going to be with us. We'll get into the Chiefs draft coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. 2-minute drill in the 4. Need to know David Lesky, Royals insider from Inside the Crown.
Rough weekend, non-winning weekend for the Royals. But
yeah, let's start there. Disappointing, but not crushing. What's your takeaway from the weekend? How do you score it? How do you grade it? Disaster? No big deal? What do you think?
No, not a disaster. Any series in which you don't get swept, I think is ever a disaster unless you're, you know. Now that I think about it, there isn't a spot where I think it's a disaster. It's disappointing to lose a series that you win the opener. That's kind of rough. It's difficult to lose a series when you win the first game and you think you get your two best pitchers coming up and they don't pitch particularly well. That's very disappointing. But that's what I'd say. I would just say it's kind of a letdown. an overarching term would be just kind of a letdown.
Okay. Adam, what do you take away?
I take away my biggest takeaway was just how much I sat there Saturday going, well, at least fighting back into it, really dug into the Orioles bullpen. So that should be a good sign for Sunday. And was me being really wrong about that? Something about the Royals' bats or something about me just being dumb? That was my biggest takeaway.
Well, I do think the question marks about the Royals' lineup are certainly arising. Now, part of that is they're arising at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles, who are a tough customer, right? So, like, the first thing I think you got to do is check yourself on, okay, you know, I mean, the expectations grow. As you succeed, you push your own bar forward, and so we grade based upon the team being a contender as long as it's going to be a contender. In this series, they won the first one 9-4, lose 9-7, and then yesterday, what was the final?
5-0? Yeah. First game I can think of in a while that was just like, eh. There was never really any thought about it.
Yeah, it and so the run differential for the weekend ends up being
-18-16,
minus two. That's not bad.
No.
Right? But when you score the runs, does matter. While baseball overall can be viewed from a lens of if you're scoring a lot of runs and you're just like, God, when we score 9, we give up 10, and when we score 1, we give up 2. Like, well, first of all, if that's happening all the time, you've got a negative run differential. But, yes, you're clearly having some bad luck. But then when you – and so I'm a big believer run differential is a better indicator of where you're going, and the Royals' run differential is very good, right? Still, they're not tops. Yeah. The Cleveland Guardians have moved past them. I think they're still second.
I do want to note the I think the Royals may have been ahead of the Guardians as of Thursday, and the Guardians are buoyed. They had a weekend series against wherever the hell the A's are playing now.
Yes.
So they are buoyed by at least this past weekend playing a tournament.
Well, we gave the numbers going into it. Both the Guardians and Royals had fattened up on bad teams. The Guardians get to continue against the, you know, going up against the A's, eventually they're going to play the same kind of caliber of teams. Like, that day is coming. But, yes, you are right. And, you know, we go back to it. Like, the Royals are playing are playing even ball, run differential-wise, against everybody not named the White Sox and Astros. Those teams, they crush.
Yeah. Despite the fact that they're only 4-8 in those games, they're even on the run differential. Which I tell you that they've probably had some misfortune in not winning more than 4 of 8. You don't necessarily have to be 6-6, but even a game better. Grab one of those games, and you're 14-8, and that feels better than 13-9.
Tomorrow night, by the way, the Guardians take on the Red Sox. So they step up. Red Sox are 13-10. They step up in caliber of talent. But the point here is, listen, it's still early. There's a reason why everybody says 40 games. There's a reason why everybody says Memorial Day. Because by then, you've played some good teams. You've played some bad teams. You've had a chance to fatten up on the bad ones. You know, measure yourself against the good ones. But I do want to point out, like, their expected one loss based on their run differential against the teams not named Astros and White Sox. Still think the Astros are going to be better. But they're not. They weren't when the Royals were playing them. And we know the White Sox are terrible. I mean, 6-6, this is they continue to be, even though they're 4-8. And I do think there's something to be said that, yes, big picture finish to the run differential thing is, yes, the run differential is a great indicator, but they do score it in 9-inning increments. And so, you know, sometimes one run is more important. So your ability to get one run is part of the equation. You may shun the big inning because you only need one. And you may have had a big inning if you score the game winner in the bottom of the ninth and it's a walk-off. That's it. That's all you need. Who knows how many more you would have gotten? Who knows how many more you would have given up when you lose games that way in the ninth? It can hide it. But over the long haul, the baseball season will tell, for the most part, the reality. Although the Marlins and Diamondbacks made the playoffs last year with negative run differentials, and the Diamondbacks went all the way to the World Series. San Diego Padres were way to the positive. And this is where it comes to winning in the nine-inning game. They couldn't win any one-run games. Couldn't win any extra-inning games. Couldn't win any one-run games. And it killed them. There's clearly a flaw there. All I take away from this series against the Baltimore Orioles is the Orioles are really good. They're better than the Royals. And, you know, you won one by kind of a laugher. You got beat by kind of a laugher. And one game went down to the wire where you showed a lot of moxie and coming back and making it a fight. And I'm with you. They did do so. They did wear out the Orioles' pen. And we'll see if they, you know, are a little thin the next couple of days and take on water. It's something you definitely want to do. And I thought that's all it was going to be when Salvador Perez hit a three-run home run. I'm like, okay, well, let him know you were here. Screw you, Corbin Burns. You're not coming in here and kicking dirt in our face. We'll put three on your board. You're not shining your ERA when you come through Kansas City. You're going to come out of here with some dents. And then they fought. And I'm like, well, now they're really making them work. And I had the same thought you did. Well, this should bode well for Sunday. And, you know, they had a shot. They were one more blast. Maybe a bloop away, you know, a couple of more knocks away from getting a win against a team that may end up being the best team in baseball. So I can't get down. They're often running on their 19 against teams that, you know, at the time when they set sail on the voyage, had winning records, they're 1-2. And we're looking for 9-10, right? 10-9, we'd be thrilled, we said. Right? But we're expecting 8-11. To 7-12, like then we put 7.5. We said was the,
I think so.
What we put the win total at on this 19 game stretch, they're 1-2. This is what we expected. They haven't exceeded what we expected, but they're playing the kind of ball we think. There are flaws in this team, and here, listen, are they going to make the playoffs? Well, let's enjoy the ride. Number one,
yeah.
Let's enjoy every day that looking at the standings is worthwhile. They have fallen to three back, but as Adam pointed out, the Guardians just got to fatten up on the A's. The Royals were battling with the O's. The Guardians will have to take their turn with the Orioles as well. So three back is fine. So enjoy that part of the equation, but the lineup does look like a problem. I mean, it does, and I think the way we titled the Kauffman Corner podcast last night was, you know, the lineup's something to the effect of the lineup's fine except for the top and the bottom.
Especially that 8-9-1. That's a desert.
Yeah. And particularly when you look at it last night, I mean, the numbers that are there from Renfro, 538 OPS. Frazier, 486. Felix Fermin, or Freddie Fermin. 459. Garrett Hampson, 509. Kyle Isbell coming in, 467. Turn it over to Michael Garcia, 560. That's a rough go.
Yeah. That combined with the team they just played over the weekend makes me think, and I hope this doesn't make me a bad fan, but, God, I really hope they're in a position in July where they're not even tempted to do anything but sell. Look, I'm not looking for another 58-win
season. So you want
them
to lose?
I want them to be in a position to sell. I want their young – I think the ideal situation is their young core plays really well, and they're not in a position where they're tempted to buy come July. And more importantly, that they are in a position where they think they need to sell.
Well, I hope – I hear what you're saying. I mean, if I wanted to be argumentative, I'd be, well, I hope they're in first place and number one.
Yeah.
Well, we all do. But realistically, yeah, I hope they're not in no man's land and choose to buy and give up what little talent they have down in the system. Because here's reality. Michael Massey's arrived. Go get him, boys. Like, if you think Matt Quatrero is going to pencil whip the lineup past somebody, no. Like, they're there. The guys who are going to have to get it done are there. This is on the players. The players have to get this done. Right? And because who are you going to call? Ghostbusters would be better than the Storm Chasers. I mean, Listen, Drew Waters is showing some decent numbers. It's the most sterile 900 OPS you could see.
Yeah.
It's kind of a home run. It's one home run. It's a double here or there.
Yeah.
There's no, like, well, he's red hot. He's 11 for his last 26 with three home runs now. And he's striking out about 25% of the time. And Nick Prado is striking out more than 30%, or right around 30% of the time.
That's greatly concerning.
So there really isn't anybody down there that's like, okay, here we go. We're good to go. So it's going to have to be the guys that are on this club. Now, the scary part, Cole Riggins. Uh-oh. What's wrong with him?
Who wasn't thinking?
Oh, everybody
does. About forearm tightness. Next thing we hear is forearm tightness.
Yeah, everybody's thinking that way. Good news is we've heard nothing along those lines yet, and guys do have bad days. And it was not a lot of loud noises, right? They weren't just
more
crushing
loud
the
noises
ball.
Yesterday than there were on Saturday.
Yes, yes. So the Cole Riggins thing is of note, but he wasn't just getting smacked around.
Right.
So guys have a day. You'd love to see him be able to pull out of that and fight through for a five-inning, five-run day, a James Shields special, 5 2/3, five runs. You know, those are the bad days. You don't like to see a guy leave that early, but listen, he's been great. And at some point, he's got to quit coming up against the aces. That's got to work its way around.
And I think I'd rather, to some degree at least, the seven runs in the second, it would be, I think, better than maybe three in the first, two in the second, two in the third, you know, where he goes out there at the start of every inning and can't get anything done. He had one awful inning. The wheels completely came off, and that was it. That, to me, is preferable than the going out each time and gradually getting, you know, just losing two or three runs every single inning, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so, look, it begins. They get a pass grade on a pass fail. No, they didn't win the series. But, you know, it was a professional performance. But the bats are starting to become concerning.
Yeah.
And I think the bats will eventually solve Adams. Like, I picked 77 wins, and I was like, ugh, am I just being a home run? I was like, they weren't as bad as they looked last year, and I think they're definitively better this year. 77 wins. I feel pretty good about that. If you want to go bet FanDuel right now, they have a bet where you can bet teams over 80 wins. Everybody, they got a line for everybody over 80 wins. Like the Royals are like, they're like 200-1 to have the best record in baseball, and 120-1 to have the worst record. Well, that speaks to them being in the middle. Over 80 wins for the Royals. Do you know what the line is? +102. About as even money as you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
105.
On an odds bet, it's just even. +100 would be even. But they're giving you just a, they're just slightly thinking they're not going to get to 80 wins when they put that number up there. If you think this is an above 500 team or a 500 team, get on it.
Mm-hmm.
You can bet it right now, +102 at FanDuel. So, you know, this is who they are, and this is how you regress back to being 500-ish. And by the way, after the great start, we will be disappointed, but 500-ish is a tremendous improvement. And keeps you looking at the box score, keeps you looking at the standings for a long time. So I'll take it. Let's take some phone calls, 913-3810-810. 913-3810-810. You're in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you for joining us here on a busy Monday. 913-3-810-810, 913-3-810-810, the number. Let's go to the phones. Ted, waiting patiently. You're on the program, Ted. What's going on, buddy?
You know, Saran, my friends all bought me a T-shirt once that said I was a charter member of the Piss and Moan Club.
Okay.
So here I come.
Ready.
Just a couple things on a couple players first, and then something about how I felt about the Orioles series. Isbell can't hit a lick. I don't know what they're thinking there. And the thing that kind of shocked me a little bit was I love Massey as a player, and especially what position he plays, but I didn't know he had a back issue. And I'm curious how much time and effort they're going to put into him with you know, back issues are so chronic. So I don't know where they go with that. I was a little deflated. I've enjoyed the season so far, and I like a lot of the things they're doing. But I kind of just felt like we were. It really showed where we're at, where the Royals are at, and where the Orioles were at. You know, in that game day before yesterday, they had 49 foul balls in 9 innings. And is that preparation? Is that scouting? Is that talent? Is that the guy catching? You know, we had four different pitchers that gave up 40. They were honest, all like they knew it was coming. So I don't know what that was. I just don't think deep enough.
I think one of them.
And hitting.
You talking about the foul balls yesterday?
No, the foul balls were in Reagan's game.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of, one, they're really talented. It starts with the player. I mean, they can get the bat on the ball. He is a swing-and-miss guy. He's a high strikeout guy. He has a high swing-and-miss rate, and they're able to get the bat on the ball and spoil the good pitches. And then when he makes a mistake, they're good enough. Like most big leaguers are good enough to make any pitcher pay that makes a mistake. And, you know, if you make him keep throwing, eventually they're going to make a mistake. And again, I'll point out, they did not crush him.
No. What Quintero said was that, you know, he struck out 3 in the first inning, and it was all on fastballs. And then he came out the second inning and was throwing curveballs, and that kind of got things going. And that's where I go back. Fermin was catching, correct, on Reagan?
Let me double check. Stay here one second.
That's such a drastic number on how they were on. They were really honest the last.
No, Salvi was catching.
Yeah. Salvi was catching
because he homered late.
Yeah. Yep. You're right. I just wondered if it was something about scouting or just the Orioles are just that much better, and that was a little bit.
I think if we see the White Sox teeing off on him, then he's tipping pitches, or you know, like when you lose to the Orioles, they're really good, and you let it go, and you move on down the road, and let's see what they can do with the next series. I think your point, Ted. You know, I don't think there's. Like, sometimes you just run into somebody that's better than you. And when you get off to that shiny 12-6 start, we all want to believe that, okay, here it is. They're one of the best teams in baseball. And they're just not, right? They're just not there yet. They've taken a huge leap forward. And that's a great sign. But some of the guys that were red hot to start are coming back to the pack. MJ Melendez's numbers now are good. They're not spectacular. They're good. He's kind of coming back, right? Even Bobby Wood Jr. is not going to OPS 1400, right? Babe Ruth didn't. He won't either, right? So, you know, that we're seeing some of the regressions. And I think the reality is, can't we all agree that for the most part, they were kind of hot across the board? They were more hot than it was like a couple of guys are hot, but Vinny Pascantino was cold. Otherwise, they had a lot of hot bats.
Yep.
And now they're kind of cooling off. Vinny's hitting. Salvi's second in the American League or maybe in baseball in RBI.
And had a starting rotation with an ERA of 1.6.
Yeah,
that's not sustainable.
They look like a 500 team. And if they had anything where they could make some moves to do something different, where you could replace Isbell, whether you could whether Garcia could be moved down into the bottom of the lineup and have a different leadoff hitter, if they had 3 or 4 more guys that could come in and be starting pitchers. I just don't think they have the depth to do anything better than a 500 season. And I'll enjoy the heck out of it. I'm just saying that's where I think they're at.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And, Ted, thanks for the call, buddy. And I think that's where we all are. I mean, reality is they're not quite ready for primetime players. Now maybe they will be. You know, can you find some guys to bat 7, 8, 9 in an off season? You can. Can you find a guy to bat 1? Not without a big paycheck. And you know, you got to decide. Well, what do you do? Do you just drop Garcia down, bump the next 5 up? Because they're pretty good. Witt, Pascantino, Perez, Melendez, Velasquez. Those numbers are good. They've been effective. You know, they've been one of the more effective, you know, tandems that part of the lineup than anybody in baseball. But it is a desert after that. Now, the good news is they've got enough guys to line up five guys in a row, which if you can do that, you can score a lot of runs. Coincidentally, somebody's going to get on in front of them. And then you're lining up good hitter after good hitter and making a pitcher work. So we got a lot of pieces, and it does. It feels empty after you get the big start and you're like, okay, I'm excited. Let's go take two out of three out of Baltimore. Let's feed this beast. Let's get nutty. Let's meet the fellas, you know, for some Coronas to watch the game. And, you know, it's like I want to be all in again. And you're like, we're not the Orioles.
They're the Orioles. That's the team they're trying to be.
Now, the good news is you don't have to be the Orioles to be in the race in this division, and you don't have to be the Orioles to win this division. As good as the Guardians look right now, they're going to play good teams too, and they will look different against those good teams. How much different? I don't know. I'm not saying the Royals are definitely better. They have much more recent pedigree in Cleveland than we've got here in Kansas City, but you know, I don't know that anybody's going to run away and hide. Can you be an above 500 club? And then I think the question becomes in the trade market, how much are you willing to spend to support that? And for me, it's not a lot, right? I'm not, because I see the holes. Hey, Seth Lugo had a great year. Awesome. Well, we can count on him. Oh, no, he went to free agency. All right, no, Lugo's got one more year. He's the one that's got two. But Michael Walker had a great year. Well, we can count on him. Nope, he opted for free agency. Right? That's true of a number of guys. So there's a lot of pieces they're going to have to re-recruit and repay and then go look to get better. Because, again, I don't see it coming. There's one guy pitching. And I got to look him up. He's in Double A, I think. Who's got like a 16 per nine. I'm drawing a blank who it is. I'll have it when we come back. How about that?
Yeah.
I'll give you the man's name when we come back, unless I land on it right now, which I might, because I want to get there.
While you're doing that, I'll say this. To make kind of a cross-sport comparison, if you could think of this team, as much as the record itself, it's who's contributing to that record. If you are, back in the day, pre-transfer portal, if you had a team full of freshmen on your basketball team, you would kind of take a 7 seed if you knew it was all those freshmen and sophomores contributing to it, assuming that they were going to stick around, you know, back in the actual way back when they stayed for 4 years. It's kind of one of those things. As much as it's what is their record, it's who's contributing to it.
Yes.
That's what I'm looking for.
2022 third-round pick Mason Barnett is lighting up Northwest Arkansas. 15 and a third, 8 hits, 4 runs, 5 walks, 21 Ks.
Nice .85 whip.
Yeah. So he's the one guy that's looking promising, but again, he's 23 years old and in Double A. So he's pretty age appropriate. I mean, he needs to be in the big leagues next year to be age appropriate.
Yeah.
All right. This is not a 19-year-old kid where you go, oh.
No.
He's doing what he ought to be doing.
But he needs
if
to
he's
going to
be a big leaguer.
Yeah, if he's not here next year, then close that door too.
And he's not your prototype. 6 feet, 220. So, but he's the one guy that's really, you know, there are other guys that are doing well. You know, Jonathan Bolin is doing well. You know, he's got a 109.5 whip. He's got a 2.57 ERA, 21 Ks in 21 innings. But again, he's 27 years old in AAA. Like, you're supposed to be good in AAA at 27. You're supposed to be already in the big leagues.
You're supposed to be in the fourth year of your major league career if you're good in the.
Yeah, if you're going to be great, see Bobby Witt.
You're looking for your second contract, not your first major league deal.
913-3810-810. What is the history of taking offensive tackles where the Kansas City Chiefs will select in this draft, sitting at 32, or if they were to move up a little, move back a little, what kind of tackle are you going to get? We'll talk about it next here in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB Thursday night. You'll be listening to myself, Curtis, Adam, and Mark Borrechter, along with ESPN's fantastic coverage of the NFL draft. We'll be going back and forth between ESPN and all the live angles of the Chiefs draft. We'll be doing that Thursday night, so make plans to join us for our NFL draft show. It is truly a labor of love. Offensive tackle, we're going to take the four spots. We've been talking tackle, wideout, and D-line. And then we heard a lot from Brett Veach about corner.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to hit all four of those spots. What can you expect at 32 or in the neighborhood of 32 if the Chiefs were just to trade up no more than five, up or down five spots? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Curtis has compiled the list of offensive tackles going back to 07?
04.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's
07 was the first one in that group, but I just went back to the last 20 drafts.
And so the first thing that jumps at us is there aren't that many.
13.
I mean, in all the years since 04, only 13 have been taken between picks 27 and 37, right?
Yep.
So that's 11 picks out of the draft, and there's only been 13 taken.
20 years.
In 21 years.
Or
this will be 21.
Yeah.
20 years.
So
yeah.
What's that, 11 to 220 selections?
Yeah.
13.
13
tackles.
Were tackles. Here are the names. See if you're excited. Joe Staley from Central Michigan was very good for the Niners.
Hall of Fame, probably.
I mean, yeah.
Maybe.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
Roger Saffold. Derek Sherrod.
No.
Gabe Kareemi. Mitchell Schwartz.
Hello.
He went 37 in the second round to Cleveland.
How much tackle did he play in the pros? I know he didn't play much at all with the Chiefs.
Schwartz?
Yeah.
Played only tackle.
Only right tackle.
Who the hell? I'm thinking of.
Thinking of Jeff, his brother?
Yeah. Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mitchell was the really, really good.
Mitchell was on. He was opposite.
Don't try to cover it up.
Yeah, duh.
Just take the L.
No, I'm. I,
take the L.
I'm,
okay.
I'm pointing out how dumb I was that he was a tackle on the first Super Bowl team.
Yes.
That's how dumb I am.
That's the guy. Now you got it. Donovan Smith.
Old
out of Penn
alert,
State went
alert.
34 to the Bucks. Started for two Super Bowl winners.
Yep.
Played safety for the Chiefs, right? Am I thinking
sure.
the right guy?
Yeah, you got it. You got it. We'll just keep going here. Cam Robinson is getting paid handsomely in Jacksonville.
For sure.
Ryan Ramczyk with the Saints. I think he did
getting
start.
Paid.
And yeah. And did he? Was he?
I thought he got the.
What was their Super Bowl year?
No, he was 09.
Yeah, that was longer. Greg Little, Carolina. Jawan Taylor.
Hello.
Was picked 35 to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
New friend alert.
There's a lot of ex-Chiefs.
I know.
Or future Chiefs.
Yeah, players would go on to play for the Chiefs.
Caleb McGarry to the Falcons is a starter. Isaiah Wilson to Georgia. Landon Dickerson to the Philadelphia Eagles. Cole Strange and Anton Harrison went 27 to Jacksonville last year. So some of the younger guys, the jury's still out. But you can find a tackle, but there's no – the best of the bunch is probably the oldest one, Joe Staley. And I think teams went, how do we let Joe Staley go?
Only two players in that list have gone to the Pro Bowl, and both those the two oldest picks on there. Saffold went to 2, Staley went to 6. Ryan Ramczyk and Mitchell Schwartz did not go to the Pro Bowl, but were first-team All-Pros, that odd little oddity. So 4 of the 13 have hardware.
What it says to me is –
they either go early or you get value late. You go up and get the guy you want. If you don't get the guy you want, you try to find someone down the road who fools people.
And we mentioned, 9 offensive tackles in one of the mock drafts were gone before pick 32. I mean, this is where you're looking to trade up, right? That's you do this exercise to see, okay, how do we think it's going to go? And you put them in. Trust me, the Chiefs are putting a mock draft together, numerous ones on what they think could end up landing in front of them. And then, as we heard Brett Veach say, yes, you play out the process and you see what could happen so that you're ready in case you've got a top five guy that's suddenly there at 15. Then that becomes, the you know, the impetus to say, okay, we've got to move a lot of capital and go up and get a guy. But you're ready for it. And you got a spot. And that's where Brett Veach talks about, well, we've made our calls, and we know where people are sitting and what they're looking at.
It was very illuminating. We heard that a little bit about that last year, too, because it isn't just saying, well, what your board is. It's understanding the boards of the other teams around those spots and knowing what they value. Because you may say, well, we know we can get to 25 because this team's looking for X, and their board has this guy maybe high. We got to get past ahead of him, but the team ahead of them might have a completely different idea of who's good. And being able, having to balance all that stuff, and know that, you know, the reaction time has to be pretty quick. Is quick as it seems on draft night. I think it's illuminating just how much prep work goes in to where when you do get in that spot and the pressure's on, you make the right call because you've studied it for 4 days.
Yeah, I think that's all the work. You know, how many times did he say, make sure the phone number's right?
Yes. It's little things you wouldn't even think about. Make sure all the phone numbers are correct and the phones work.
We really, really want to get the phone number correct.
Because when you call a guy for a trade, you hear, we're sorry. That's a bad thing.
That's not what you were hoping to hear. So to move up, we always like to look at some of the trade charts. Let me put in. We get the KC pick is valued at 590. Like, just there's all these numeric charts. You can find them everywhere. They're there.
That's the most reliable one, the one that has them at 590.
Yeah. It's one we like to use. So if you say, okay, how high do you think you're going to have to go? Adam, how high do you think they'd have to go to get a left tackle that they would feel comfortable is going to start and play right away, you know, on the left side?
Where do the Cowboys pick?
Yeah, I think they've got to go in front of Dallas. Dallas is at 24.
Yeah.
20, I don't know if there's somebody be really good will still be there. I'll say, you know what, I'll just use a round number, top 20. So I'll say they got to get above 20, so 19.
Okay, Pittsburgh's at 20. They could use a tackle. The Rams are at 19. They could use a tackle. Cincy's at 18. Are they going to trade? Let's go to 17. Jacksonville, Doug Peterson, our buddy. Doug, come on. You need a lot of things. We need one guy. What are we going to do? So we always like to talk about the numeric value. You got to go from 590 to 950 on this chart. So you need 360 points of value to get up to 17. That is number 64, which is 270. And it's probably swapping
120 and...
Yeah, you're probably going to have to swap 95 for a fourth.
Yeah.
Or you're going to have to give up a next year's third? Would you do that? Would you do 32, 64, and a next year's third to go to 17?
If I feel confident that I've got my franchise left tackle, yes, without a doubt.
Oof.
Man, that's a lot, that second round pick.
32 is way down there.
Yeah, that's what someone asked me today. They said, you know, what could the Chiefs do if they could they get up to Joe Alt? I'm like, you can't, because they're at seven, and that's 50. They don't have enough. If they every pick in this draft, you'd still need next year's first round pick to get to the seven.
Let's say Joe Alt gets to 10.
Okay.
And you're like, okay, that's where we went to for Patrick Mahomes. What do we got to do?
That's 710 points.
710 points, which is this year's first. It's next year's first. And it's at least this year's third. And they're like, well, we don't want a next year pick. It's every pick you have. And that's still not enough.
Yeah.
It's your whole draft. So you have to get a next year's first involved. If you do that, you know, that and, like, this year's third.
And I don't think you move
is
that
he worth
many
that?
Spots. Nobody but a quarterback to me is worth a move that high. I mean, it's a that's just my general philosophy. to go from 32, what it takes to go from 32 to 10, I don't think you do that for anything but your quarterback.
There's something we're not considering here, fellas, is that if they give up.
I can't wait for what kind of lunacy is about to come out of your mouth.
Because there's a coin toss whether it's a serious comment or
no, it's not serious. There's no way.
They give up a next year's first round, we don't have to work the Thursday night draft show. Boom.
Well, he's outside the window. Should we ask him if that's
the case?
Yeah,
good timing to bring that up. We'll be here, sir. The boss is literally 3 feet from Curtis's head.
I could reach up and touch him if it weren't for the glass.
We're really hoping that they'll trade away the future. We're 10 firsts. Trade them all away.
The two corner offices are right there in the...
See...
Nice tie, sir.
That's... You don't think right.
Oh,
you know what that means? Oh, so you guys are available on Friday.
Right.
Enjoy Thursday. I'll see you on Friday. So,
because Friday's longer.
No.
But no, that's that's a heap for a... But that's just such a freaking important... I'm probably gun-shy because of spending an entire playoff run watching Mahomes limp for his life. You know? But that's a lot, man.
The more reasonable is 24, 25, 26, 27. We brought up 27. That would take, like, you know, you give your third and...
First and a third.
Yeah, first and a third and even get like, maybe a fourth back, you know?
You know.
I could see it.
Yeah, that seems more like what we could see happening.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of teams that are looking at tackles. And that makes it even harder. So the cost to go get them will be prohibitive. I think it'll be too much. And it's one of the reasons why I wonder if corner isn't the position that they're kind of like, listen, this tackle and wideout thing is insane. But it's going to push corners down.
Yeah.
And so the best player on the board at a premium position – very well could be a corner, and that's why we heard him mention it a couple times.
I could see it.
I could see it.
For sure.
I could see it. I you know, if they take it, I'm good. I'll live with it. But, yeah, I think, you know, we had that question on there could be only one. Are you going to pick before 32, 32, or after? Which would you predict? And... Yeah, we both said up. Adam and I said up. Everybody else said stay at 32, right? I think they'll find something they got to have, whether it's a wide out or a tackle. I think if there are four positions they're looking at, they're going to find somebody.
Yeah.
Somebody that, like, okay, here's our guy. Let's go get him. And I think the bait will be, you know, a couple of picks. They could do it with a fourth and change to get to 28, 29. I don't think it's going to be a big jump, but maybe in front of Baltimore. Just, I think there's similar mindset. And to stick it to them for taking Zay Flowers.
Ravens just get the draft, man.
Are you excited to hear that again?
I am. I know it's coming. About 3 o'clock on Sunday.
Okay. Do you have a tackle that is your dream tackle, since we're doing tackles today?
That's within range, it would probably be Mims.
Yeah, Mims.
Because of the pass blocking ability.
Mims is mine.
Yeah.
He's my...
The other guys are... And I'm hearing, like... There's a couple of them that I saw the time that maybe may go as guards. Maybe alters things. But Mims is the guy I think is within their reach that seems to fit best with their what they need. Guyton, I think, is too much of a – got too much work to do in the pass block, but Mims is my guy.
Yeah, that's the one. I don't think he'll be there. I think he'll go like 19, 20, 21, somewhere there. But that would be my dream if they're going to move up. We'll see what happens Thursday night. We'll be calling the action live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The draft is always on here on 810. We will take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the Chiefs draft with Adam Teicher next here in the program.
All right, how many Royals have hit a home run and stolen three bases in the same game? Brought to you by Good Sense.